2 minutes.
Thank you.
me warmly welcome all of you for this call. It is on the glories of the Purushottam month and how we can all take the maximum benefit for our spiritual life, the maximum strength, the maximum empowerment from this month. As it is known all over the spiritual cultures of the world, there are certain astrological constellations which enable the growth, the progress of spiritual life. You could call these constellations openings through which blessings come to all of us. And the month, which started yesterday and will go on through for 30 more days, the month of Purushottam is such a time. In the Padma Purana, in ancient Vedic scriptures, it is described how there needed to be an extra month. All the month had already their names, Govinda and other names. But one month needed to be placed extra into the succession of months, into the whole year, to balance the calendar out. And when this month arrived, it was scorned upon. I think we all know newcomers who have new ideas are in the beginning looked down upon very often, just because they break the established order which is already there. So this extra month was criticized by the other months, so that finally it became really very, very depressed. And thinking there is no other shelter than the lotus feet of Krishna, it cried and went to the Lord. The merciful Lord received this newcomer and pronounced a blessing. He said, "I shall make this poor month, this poor extra month, just like me in quality, fame, opulence, realization, success, and in giving benedictions and blessings to the devotees. Just like I can give blessings to everyone, this new month will be able to give blessings to everyone. It will become equally potent. I'm bestowing all of my divine qualities in this abused month. Named after me, this month will become famous as the Purushottam month in this world." I think we all know Purushottama is a name which relates to Krishna. It means the best of persons. And then the Lord said something which I think for all of us is very important. All of us have seen that it is sometimes difficult to overcome our own weaknesses, our obstacles on our own. But if there is blessings, if there's an investment of strength, then the impossible becomes possible. So the Lord said, "My Goloka Dham," it means my spiritual kingdom, "is unattainable to the performers of austerities. Even great souls, the Mahatmas who engage in pious activities, will find it difficult to enter my kingdom. It's difficult to attain even for people who maintain celibacy or who fast during their whole life. My God. But just by observing the Purushottam month and becoming a devotee, one can easily cross over the material ocean and return back to Godhead. I think we all look for easy ways, for shortcuts. Here's one which is authorized by the Lord. Observe this month, and that which is so difficult to cross over the ocean of material shortcomings becomes easily possible by the blessings of the Lord. So then, at the end of speaking all these blessings, the Lord gave also the minimum required daily observances. And I want to start here. This is what you can do to be clinked in, or how do you say in English, to be absolutely connected with the blessings which are available on this month. He said, worship me, Krishna, by chanting my holy names. Study the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita daily. Give in charity and offer a ghee lamp. These are the four things. If you, by the way, are interested to find this list of things, I will post them after this in the Facebook. I do these every day. I started yesterday when our little ashram was free. All the inmates had gone for a program in Berlin. And I like to add three more observances which are to be, which come from another list. The first is to daily chant the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, since this 15th chapter is called Purushottam Yoga, the Yoga of the Supreme Person. Then I daily chant the Jagannath Ashtakam, because it glorifies the Lord of Purushottam Kshetra or Jagannath Puri. And I daily sprinkle holy water over my head. This is from Radha Kund. And I do this three drops, and you can get ready. In 2000 years, the internet is able to transport maybe apples or holy water. In 2000 years, I will be able to sprinkle you also, hopefully. Or if this is too long waiting for you, just let us just you are now fine. Good. It's a little creative. I would like to chant with you one verse of the Jagannath Ashtakam that you can get the idea what is the metta, how to chant it, how to pronounce it, and then if you want, you can chant it on your own time. There should be the verse in the comment section for you. I will just chant one line alone, and then we will start. It's a beautiful composition. It was composed by Sri Shankaracharya and chanted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes, the great Shankara bowed down to Lord Krishna. Kadachit kalindi tata vipina sangeeta kavaro. Everyone, please. Kadachit kalindi Tata vipina sangita kavaro. Continue. Udabiri nari vadama kalabas vadama dupa. Rama Shambhu Brahma Marapati Ganesha Chitapado Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me. Last line. Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me. Sometimes Sri Jagannath Deva Purushottama makes supremely sweet melodious music with his flute within the groves along the banks of the Yamuna. This refers to Lord Krishna, who plays his celebrated flute in the forest of Vrindavan. And it tells us what Krishna wants. Like a bee who is thirsty for honey, he jubilantly relishes the lotus faces of the gopis. But he's not just a cowherd boy. No, his feet are offered worship by great personalities such as Lakshmi, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Ganesh. May Jagannatha Swami kindly enter into the pathways of my vision. This has altogether 8 verses. We have just chanted one so that you can get the traditional melody in which to chant it. This will connect you with the Lord Purushottam, and this will help you to worship him. Another observance we will do now, worshipping me, Shri Krishna, by chanting my holy names. I will request my dear guest Madhava to chant with all of us for a little while the holy name.
Thank you. Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Madhava. I feel almost cruel to interrupt this beautiful kirtan now, as we know that you are happy to chant 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. And but thank you for appearing as a guest on this call. Hare Bol. Good. So, the observances of this month of Purushottam grants us an entry into the spiritual world. One of the observances which we do during this time is to read the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where an important question is raised. Is this world our home, or is it a hotel only? When you stay for a few days in one hotel room, you will not invest all your energy to put nice furniture and nice paintings. But you will know, I'm just passing through here in order to reach my home. So the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita tells us very clearly where our home is, where Purushottam, the highest personality, the Lord, is waiting for us. And it also tells us how to deal with this material world. In the beginning of the 15th chapter, this world is compared with a reflection of a tree inside the waters of a river. As you enter the river, being allured by the mangoes or whatever fruits are on that tree, you will soon find out that the actual mango is somewhere else. The mango which you can eat in the reflection will not satisfy you, it will make you more hungry. In the same way, the fruits which the Vedas promise, the fruits of this world, are at best temporary. They are reflections only, and they cannot satisfy the hunger of the soul. So therefore, the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita encourages us right in the beginning, don't invest into this world so much. Don't invest your all and everything into it. It's only a temporary stay. Ashashvatam, it means that which will not last up till tomorrow. No, it will be terminated. And the 15th chapter then points out joyously to the kingdom of God. It says, Na tat bhashayate suyo, na shashanko na pavaka, yat gatvana nivatante, tat dhamma paramang mama. Huh? It says, detach from this world. cut the tree of illusion, the reflection, and you will discover at the root of the tree that from whom everything started. You will discover the Lord, and then go to your home in the eternal kingdom of God. That supreme Lord, that supreme abode of mine, says Krishna, is not illumined by the sun or the moon, nor by fire or electricity. It means it won't get too hot, and it will also not get too cold there. Those who reach it never return to this material world. Srila Prabhupada said, one should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. The reflected tree and the fruits is a false reflection. This world is like that, a false reflection which cannot satisfy the hunger of the soul. Now, how do you extricate yourself? How do you move from the illusion to the reality? Well, that is discussed in the rest of the chapter. For 11 verses, we will find a process of yoga which is called Purushottam Yoga that extricates our entangled soul from this world of illusion and brings us to the Lord. It's actually very, very delightful. This yoga starts with an understanding of who you are that lives now in this false reflection of the world. It says, you are a living entity that is actually a part of Krishna, and you struggle in this world with the six senses that include the mind. The example is given. You pull your material life behind you like a prisoner pulls his chains. Sounds almost spooky behind him. It's a struggle. Your movements, in other words, are not unrestricted. You are not free. You are a bound soul. And what is your destiny in this world? It describes you will go on and on taking on new bodies in the vain hope to find substance in this world and satisfaction. It describes in the second part of the 15th chapter the science of reincarnation, how you take your concepts which you had in one life with you into the next body, like the air which carries fragrances. Someone thinks, oh, I would like to ride the waves of the ocean. Another thinks, I would like to be a musician. Another thinks, I would like to be a politician. And you take all these concepts like fragrances with you from one body to the other, trying to satisfy your desires in a world where the desires cannot be satisfied. Krishna says, foolish people don't see this, but you can actually see it through the eyes of knowledge. And I remember when Srila Prabhupada met Graf Durkheim, highly placed aristocratic man in Germany who had fought during the Second World War in Japan and who had been hit by bullets and his body had a near-death experience. He described to Prabhupada how when the bullets hit his body, he actually left the body and saw himself from above, and later saw how the medicinal people came to try to save him. And Graf, and he said, at that time I could see I'm actually not this body, I'm the life in the body, and I can leave the body. And then he turned to Prabhupada and said, how do you teach this essential lesson to your disciples? How do you make them understand that they are not the body, but an eternal soul? This was an important question. Prabhupada and Graf Dürkheim were together on a morning walk. So Prabhupada stopped abruptly. He put his cane on the ground and he gave his answer. I teach them by telling them what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Graf Dürkheim must have thought this is a very theoretical approach. And he said, that's all? And Prabhupada said, that's sufficient. And he had this in mind, what Krishna said. You may not be able to see with these eyes how the soul enters the body, lives for a few years in it, and then leaves it and goes to the next body, but through the eyes of knowledge, you can see. So this is something. Then the next question is addressed in the 15th chapter. How can the people who are captured in this world and who are spiritually not yet so evolved nevertheless make contact with Krishna and see him? A few days ago we had a yagya here, a traditional fire ceremony, and as the fire as we fed the fire took on the form of the flute playing Krishna. We have actually a photo of that. Somehow the photo was made right at the right moment, and the fire is there with a head, with a crown, with a flute, and so on. And I obviously asked myself, was that Krishna, or was it just a temporary form which the fire made? And this brought another question with me. How can we experience Krishna in this world at all? And this is expressed in the 15th chapter in the verses 12 to 15. We will find out how Krishna is there for us physically, how he's there for our emotions, and how he is there for us if we want to make spiritual advancement and liberate ourselves from the cycle of birth and death. He says, I am the sun, I'm the light of the sun and the moon and the light of the fire. How kind! By the light of Krishna, we see in the day time, we see in the night time, and we can cook with the fire by his energy. This is how you can experience Krishna, even though you are still materially bound by the sun, moon, and fire. And then Krishna supports us in other ways physically. He enters the planet Earth and keeps it in his position. In some ways, without an energy which binds it, the earth is just a heap of dust, a fistful of dust in the universe. But by the energy of the Lord, he enters this earth and keeps it afloat. And then he comes at the moon and gives the juice in the vegetables. You know, vegetables which have moonlight have a good taste. The vegetables which are not exposed to moonlights, they lack the prana, the life force, the juice. Then he says, He enters also into our bodies as the fire of digestion. Today we ate a very nice vegan pizza, and I must admit, I feel something in the stomach. It's digested. That force of digestion, in Ayurveda, this is described to be a certain form of the fire. This fire of digestion is Krishna. After your meal, you can experience either the presence of Krishna or the absence of Krishna. When there is an absence of Krishna, you make some uncultured sounds. It's not properly digested, in other words. Then the Lord takes care of us emotionally. He says, I supply the living being with remembrance, with knowledge, and also with forgetfulness. Have you ever been in a situation where you meet someone and the person says, hello, I saw you, and you go like, oh my God, I better know his name now, or know the situation in which I met him. And you scan through your memory, there's nothing there. Then you go to the hard disk, you know, where you save the thing, and you hope something is there, and all of a sudden you say, yeah, Nicholas, it's you. And Nicholas goes, thank you. That memory, that which was supplied to you, came from Krishna. Or the memory which all of a sudden comes in a difficult situation of life, where you know, I should now respond like this. I should not do that, because that always brings me into trouble. But this new way, this different way, this more compassionate, forgiving and understanding way, that will save the situation. And then you remember that at the proper time. That is Krishna. But also, when you want to forget what is right, when you want to be clouded, when you want to go out in the night as Mr. Hyde, that forgetfulness which covers your memory, that is also supplied by Krishna. And so is knowledge. Now, for those who are interested to extricate themselves from the reflection of this world, Krishna is also there as the Vedic knowledge. All this is explained in the 15th chapter of the 15th verse of the 15th chapter. It says, I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me alone come remembrance, knowledge, and also forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna is with us, even in this world, even when we are forgetful of him, as the light of the sun and the moon, as the fire, as the vegetables, the juicy vegetables, as the fire of digestion, the ability which keeps us alive. And finally, he's there in supplying us mentally with remembrance. And if we want the path of freedom, he is there as the Vedas, as the scriptures, and so on. Then, and this is almost the end of this chapter, there comes a summary of the entire Vedic knowledge. It's from text 16 to text 19. There Krishna makes an amazing point. He says, there are two classes of beings. Those who are fallible, who fall again and again due to their weakness. And then there are those who are infallible. The fallible people reside in this reflection, in the reflected tree of reality in this world. And the infallible entities, they are in the spiritual world. But then besides all this, there is one supreme soul, the Paramatma. And even beyond the super soul, who is with the fallible living entities in the world, there is the supreme person, Purushottam, who waits in the spiritual world and who is worshipped there by the infallible living entities. It is said that this is the most confidential knowledge, and someone who knows this knows everything. Krishna ends the chapter by saying, whoever understands this will become wise and his endeavors will know perfection. My dear listeners, my dear skeptics also amongst the listeners, if you study during this month the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it will be sure, it is guaranteed that you will reach perfection and all your endeavors will be blessed. Once there was a very well-known saint, his name is Madhusudan Sarasvati, who came to Vrindavan to deliver lectures. Every afternoon, maybe around this time, he spoke at the banks of the Jamuna from the Bhagavad Gita. However, Madhusudan Sarasvati had not yet understood that the Supreme Purushottama is a delightful person. He thought God is so great, he can't be a person. He must be an energy, and he must be an impersonal light which holds everything together. And he spoke with this understanding. Now, as he was speaking every day, he noticed at the very back, in the last seat, so to say, I mean, at the end of this huge crowd of people who listened to him, there was a man sitting down with disheveled jatas, you know, hair, knotted hair. And he was talking all the time when he gave his lecture. And he sometimes laughed and he made sounds like disagreeing. So this was Madhusudan Sarasvati was a scholar. He was not used to be dealt with so rudely. So after 4 or 5 lectures, he went, when he had completed the lecture, to the man in the last row, and he said, "Can I speak to you, please?" And the man looked at him with piercing eyes. "Yes," said the man. Madhusudan Sarasvati said, "You know, it really disorients me when you make these sounds in the lecture. Did you come to hear? Then please hear. And if you came to disagree, then let us talk at another time, but not while all these people listen to me explaining the Bhagavad Gita." So the man looked at him and he said, "You say the absolute truth is unknowable to the senses, yet you speak so much about him. You say the absolute truth is the one To whom the thoughts of men go but return unsuccessfully without having grasped him. Why do you speak so much about that which is unexplainable, ununderstandable, and also unthinkable? You are a fool. You should not speak. And then this man jumped up and ran. There was something mystical about this man, Madhusudan. He took his dhoti a little higher and he ran after the man who ran at the banks of the Jamuna, and all of a sudden started to dance. Then he danced more, then he turned around, and Madhusudan Saraswati saw the Lord of Dance, the Lord of Love, Krishna, with a yellowish dhoti, a bluish complexion, a wonderful Vaijajanti garland reaching up to the down to the knees and even further down. He saw the Lord, who was laughing, and his eyes were moving back and forth, and he was playing his flute, and he understood, I should not talk about the impersonal void in the land of Krishna. He now had seen Krishna. He became ecstatic. His body made bumps like a hedgehog. He fainted, pang, to the ground. And later, he composed this beautiful verse. Listen to this verse, because it is the best of all verses, which has been written down by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to the 15th chapter. He said, I, Madhusudanda Saraswati, do not know any truth higher than Krishna, who has lotus eyes, a face beautiful like the full moon, and lips as red as the bimba fruit, who has the complexion of a rain cloud, the rain cloud which is pregnant with rainwater, who wears yellow cloth and who holds a flute in his hand. This 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita points us to this amazing personality who has created a world for us to learn. That this is a hotel room. You do your learning business quickly, and then you detach from this world. You check out of this world, which is not your home. And you do this by the Purushottam Yoga, where you focus on the Lord, who, although you left him, did not leave you. He came. He accompanies you from body to body. He is there in the food which you take, in the your ability to digest, in the remembrance which you have. And he invites you to become also an infallible living entity of his infallible kingdom of the Lord. This is why this is such a concise chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that you can, that it's good to read every day. I do read the Sanskrit. You know, I start with the first verse. I will do it for you. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Utva mulam madashakam ashvatam prahu avyayam chandam siyasya panani yastam vedasa vedavit. That's one. And then meter, the second meter you, it's good if you know, is Adas Chodvampa Shritastasya Shaka Guna Pavridha Vishaya Pravala Adasya Mulyananu Santatani Kamanu Bandini Manushya Loke. Then I read the text of the then I read one text each day. So on the first day, yesterday, I read the first text. Today I will read text 2, the translation and the purport to understand it. And then when I'm gone through all the texts in this chapter, I start again text 1. And in this way, have a wonderful roundabout of the month of Purushottam, where I'm directly focusing my whole consciousness on the best of all personalities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I need to tell you at the end that when you hear transcendental teachings like the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, you should understand that only if you apply the teachings will theoretical knowledge turn into wisdom and will give you a new vision of reality. So please, during this month, try to apply the teachings of the 15th chapter. Go and try to detach yourself a little bit from the things which you have discovered already as harmful things in your life. No? And try to have contact with people who can help you to give up weaknesses and illusions. Krishna recommends in the Bhagavatam that an intelligent person, someone who's really intelligent, should therefore reject all bad association and instead take up the association of devotees who cut off all excessive attachment of the mind. Huh? We are only in our mental worlds, which are like cobweb. When you stay together with bona fide devotees, they, by their words and realizations, cut unhealthy illusions. And finally, and lastly, I wish to say to you, please, during this time, practice in small steps what is possible for you. I will post once again, I need to say this, the glories of the Purushottam month, it's only 2 pages, on the Facebook com Sachinandan Swami, and then you will most probably have something which you can do so that you can actually detach yourself from the world of illusion and come to reality. There's a blessing which I can best explain by telling you the story of King Narasimha. He was in great danger because the commander of his army plotted with the prince to kill him. Every day these two looked for an opportunity where the king would be alone so that they could either kill him with weapons or give him poison. And Narasimha didn't even know it. But it so happened that the commander of the army soon died of cholera and was reborn as a horse in the province of Sindh. As fate would have it, a merchant saw this very fast running horse, bought it and brought it to the king and said, "King, this is the best horse. You can actually have it for this and this price. King Narasimha bought his old enemy, the commander-in-chief of the army who had become a horse. And once he was riding through nature, and the horse took him further and further away from the other people. Narasimha didn't still notice anything. He went down at some time at the lake, and he drank some water, and he noted how the horse was coming close to him, and something was wrong with the horse. The horse had taken the old concept with him. I'm the enemy of this king. I want to kill him. And he now behaved strangely and wanted to do this. At this moment, a wind came, and it blew half a verse of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in front of the king. And the king took it and he recited the verse. And when this devilish horse heard it, it fell down. It took on a four-armed form. There was a flower airplane which took him back to the spiritual world. The king was, my God, this, I lost this horse. But he's liberated now. He has been taken back to Vaikuntha. So he thought about it and he couldn't solve the mystery. So he went in. There was an ashram nearby with an all-knowing, clairvoyant Brahmin. And the Brahmin told him, King, in his past life, this horse wanted to kill you. But it died. It was the commander-in-chief of your army, but he died from cholera. He was reborn with the intention to complete what he couldn't do in his last life. But then you read something from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and he was liberated. When King Narasimha heard the power of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he gave his kingdom to his youngest, to his son, and he retired to the forest. There every day he read the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And at the end of 1 month, he returned back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, I urge you, this is the power of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as which is known, Purushottam Yoga. And if you chant this, if you read this daily in this glorious month, your destiny will be glorious also. And as the Gita says, your efforts will see success. This is the glory of the month of Purushottam. I want to give at the end one announcement. I would like to see you all again. On Sunday, the 27th of September, that's in 8 days, we will have live on Facebook, The Heart of the Holy Name. Those who know already about it know it will. We will present the instructions of the two guidebooks for chanting, that is Harinam Chintamani and Bhajan Rahasya. We will extract some practical tips how to bring your chanting of japa or kirtan to the next level, and we will have also more kirtan there. I want to thank you. Time is up. I wish you the best of your Purushottam months with a lot of blessings. And once again, if you need a summary how to practice this, it will be posted very soon on this address. All the best and Hari Bol.